Cameron Carpenter is a Juilliard-trained soloist of the organ. He's one of the very, very few organists in the world with a major recording contract and a full-time touring career that spans the globe. Early in his career, the now 35-year-old Carpenter read the classical music landscape and didn't like the place it had carved out for him in terms of repertoire and even the instrument itself. In a recent phone conversation, we talked about what he did about it. The speech you gave in front of a crowd of University of Michigan students, this was in 2010, you talked about how you'd been thinking deeply about your instrument, which is the organ, of course, and yourself as a creative artist. You said the history of organ music can come along with a lot of baggage. For one thing, when people think of organ music, they think it will be solemn and pious. And for another thing, as a concert artist, you were dealing with a different instrument every time you moved to another city to play. And it was taking up to like 2 days of rehearsing and adapting your settings of virtuosic music to each instrument. And the result of all of this thinking and planning and investment and research is a new kind of instrument you designed called the International Touring Organ. So we haven't seen anything like this in Kalamazoo before. Could you just begin by describing what it's going to look like on stage and then maybe get into its history?
Well, it's a big organ. It's an instrument that has never really traveled, of course, because the pipe organ, as we've known it, is site-specific, which means that every single instrument is unique. Now, that's one of the double-edged swords of the organ in general, because on one hand, very nice thing to be able to experience basically what amounts to an infinite multiplicity of identities in the organ as you go through your life. But at the same time, the reality of a musician, especially in the 21st century, is one of branding. And what little career traction there is for classical musicians today, diminishing as it precipitously is, depends on consistency, on brand consistency across markets. So it's very important to be able to play, as you'll see pianists and violinists do in South Korea, the same music and in the same way as in, say, South Dakota, and with the same degree of comfort and intimacy with your audience. And that, I would argue, is impossible if the sum total of the experience you have with the instrument that you're playing for those audiences is, say, 6 or 8 hours. Now, in the case of the pipe organ, modern pipe organists and the organ community today, I think, generally views the multiplicity of the organ as only a good thing. In other words, the idea that each organ is unique is not only accepted as a fact, but actually as is also understood almost with the strength of a fact to be a desirable, in other words, to be a positive. I don't view it as a positive. I want to have the same relationship with my instrument that any touring musician has with theirs. And even a pianist who goes from venue to venue will still be playing not only on pianos from the same maker, which is to say usually Steinway, but will in fact be playing the same model of piano most of the time. So even there, though there's massive fluctuations, you know, there's a great margin of error in the instruments, the infrastructure is the same. So that's what I wanted. Now, those are practical considerations and infrastructural ones. They're actually also secondary, totally, but important as I view them in the question. They're secondary to the artistic one, which is that what in the world does the way that an organ generates tone have to do with the signal-to-noise ratio that you have to overcome between the concept of the music as it exists in the mind of the performer and telegraphing that concept into the mind of the listener. And that's simply a system that requires the best conduit possible. I view the organ largely in terms of information technology because it's an instrument that operates in the binary realm, which we can talk about a bit more. And by the way, that applies to all organs. Pipe organs as well, which is in a sort of symbolic way, why I consider all organs to be digital organs. They are digital in their operation. Even a mechanical action pipe organ can be said to observe the basic values of the binary system in music. And that's writ large, of course, in the scheme of the digital organ, but in the creation of an instrument which overcomes moving parts. In other words, the creation of a great organ without moving parts would seem to be a fallacy to organ builders of old, but I would argue is actually a kind of ethical mandate that's in their instruments, that's a kind of foretelling of what's to come for the future. If you look at the organs of the 18th century, the great builders, the Cavaillé-Coll organs of the 19th century, whatever example you want to pick, you'll see outstanding examples of human ingenuity applied to the overcoming the resistance and to the triumph, in a sense, over basic aspects of physics, entropy to a certain degree, momentum, inertia, stiction, hysteresis, friction, obviously. All of these things are aspects of the physical world which are overcome so elegantly in the ancient instruments. It seems to me to be a logical extension, a logical assumption to make, a logical conclusion, really, that in overcoming physics or in intending to overcome physics, the organ builders of old understood that that was scientifically the vital link between making a machine spontaneously artistic in the hands of an artist who could understand it as such. And for that reason, it seems to me to be almost an ethical imperative that one day the organ would shed its physical garments, which is why I view the digital organ as a kind of hanging garden. It's an ideological instrument whose identity is something that can be edited and altered by the organist. So in a sense, it brings the organ and the organist closer together by allowing the organist to have a greater degree of control over the entire sound world, not just the way in which it's accessed, but the thing that it actually is. And in so doing, that's why I view the organ as the digital organ as extremely traditional in a sense, because it does build upon what can be generally shown to be the general time-honored, actually traditional values of organ building, one of which is to place the musical resources of the organ under greater and greater control of the person playing it. That was particularly the great achievement of the American organ builders at the end of the 19th century through the 20th, is the expansion of the organ into an instrument over which the organist had greater and greater control at a finer and finer scale, which of course mirrors absolutely the general scientific conquest of the 20th century and, the discovery, for instance, of the fact that the atom's implications allow us to see that the world does diminish into smaller and smaller parts. That diminishment and that aspect of scale applies very much to the organ and to the way it's played, as well as the way that it's operated. So for me, it's a natural conclusion, really a foregone conclusion on several fronts, that the organ would have to transition into the digital domain, and to fail to understand that as a logical extension of its tradition would be to fail to understand the history of the organ.
I'm speaking with virtuoso organist Cameron Carpenter, who appears Saturday on the Fontana series with the International Touring Organ, which will be set up in the State Theater of Kalamazoo. Details at fontanamusic.org. Now, with all of the thought and planning that went into this instrument, I'm sure you would never have debuted it without being extremely happy with its sound. Can you talk about how it was designed and how you worked to achieve the sound you wanted?
Certainly, and you're right about that. I mean, for me, it's my favorite organ, but then it would have to be, I mean, it should be. The organ is built by Marshall and Ogletree, which is something of a standout tech and organ builder in Needham, Massachusetts. I have had a long relationship with their instruments because their first organ, which was in New York at Trinity Church Wall Street, was a pivotal instrument for me when I was at Juilliard. In fact, it was the instrument that showed me in about 30 seconds that I was going to leave my bias toward the pipe organ behind, which I did. And so this organ is that was their first organ. This one is their eighth. It's about 2.5 years old now. And it's designed by me, which means that the identity of the organ, the way that it operates and, you know, the way that it relates to its player, the controls that it, the control system that it has, that it, you know, through which it avails itself to the performer, you might say, as well as, you know, the interior sort of structure of how that regulates what one can and can't do, is all my concept. And as are the inclusion of the sounds and, you know, as well as the appearance of the instrument. I mean, it's really an extremely personal statement, and it's also my personal statement about what I believe organ building should be and should strive for in the 21st century. It's as American an organ as one ever will hear. First of all, it's made in America. Everything about it was made in America by American craftsmen. And the organs that were sampled to create it are all American instruments. They're organs built along, for the most part, American lines, and all in America. It's not out of some nationalistic fervor. It's just, except that at the same time, it kind of is, because for me, the zenith of pipe organ building has nothing to do with Europe or the European tradition or the time of Bach or all of that. It has to do with what happened to the organ when it got to America and when it, when American expansionism and ingenuity and experimentation and particularly electricity was brought to this already centuries old instrument. And it's one of the reasons I say the organ is sort of like a society. You know, it's so much more complex than its outer facade, another organy word, would suggest. And of course, also like a society, the more diverse it is and the more parts it has in it, the more interesting it is, and probably the stronger it is. That's a value I've tried to keep loyal to in this instrument. It is a kind of super combination of the basic tenets of American organ building, which are themselves a kind of melting pot of other national schools. But it also incorporates aspects of the American theater organ, which is one of the few truly original American musical instruments, and one which is now basically obsolete in musical life. It incorporates some aspects of the best of a couple of Wurlitzer organs in ways which allow them to be used traditionally, but also allow them to contribute to the classical side of the organ in ways that they normally wouldn't in traditional organ building. And of course, the console and the entire system is built to put, in a way, art and music first. I mean, it's a fairly sacrifice demanding system, because it would be a very simple matter to plug in a sound generating element to a house sound system anywhere in America, but that's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to have a system that would allow us to install my idea of what a great organ should be in a building and have it more or less relate to that building in the way that, you know, in the way that it would if it were a pipe organ, basically. And so we have a massive sound system, but it's not a PA system. It's like a geographic system where different parts of the organ come from different parts of the building, as they should. And we have an enormous redundancy in that system because we have to put out an enormous amount of power, and particularly bass frequencies, for instance, down to 14 hertz and things like that. So that's basically what the organ is. And the way that it operates, of course, is a paean of worship to the integrated circuit and to the revolutionary technologies that have given us the digital domain. It's, for me, other than, you know, life-saving, it's really one of the most beautiful applications of mathematics and computing that I can think of, outside of medicine.
Along with this extraordinary and completely individual instrument, your repertoire is also deeply considered and designed for you as an expression of your choices and your creative impulses. But I really don't know what you're planning to perform on Saturday night at the State Theater of Kalamazoo. I wondered if you'd give us a hint of one or two things that we're likely to hear.
Well, you're sure to hear Bach. That no big surprise there, of course, because he's the sort of fountainhead of one could say organ music. But I mean, I view Bach in a sort of bigger way. I think he's an extremely serious contender for the role of most important Western thinker, or at least most enlightened. And the playing of Bach's music on the organ for me is a must. It's important for people to hear that expression of logic. But at the same time, it's a great humanism. So, you know, you can play almost anything of Bach, religious or not, and pull things out of it that are different every time. And that's irresistible to me. So there'll be Bach. There'll be, I think, improvisation. I don't remember what was announced, but it's hard for me to believe I wouldn't be improvising at some point. That's a very personal statement between you and the audience that's there, because it's the kind of thing that isn't repeated. I think there's also music by Scriabin. I mean, basically the strange thing with me, and it's a lot different than with other musicians, is that I don't actually at the moment, and of course it's, you know, for me it's old hat in a way, and beginning to be an irritating problem because the organ is already 2.5 years old, but that's pretty new by other people's standards, I guess. But you know, the issue is that I get very little practice time compared to most musicians. That's one thing I haven't solved yet. And so, you know, the reality of what pieces are choreographed in the organ as far as their orchestrational settings, sequences of combinations and stuff. And then, you know, what I have the ability to play and what I have the emotional capacity to play, and you know, all of there's a lot of moving parts that go into that.
The State Theater itself is this is the first classical concert I've seen there, because after 1927 it was built as a movie palace in this Spanish colonial kind of Gothic style. There's stars in the ceiling, light projection, clouds, statuary. But over the years, it turned into this hard rock, blues, you know, it's got sticky floors. It's a really interesting vibe. But you're not an everyday classical performer at all. I kind of can't help but think you might be even inspired by this strange old place.
I mean, I don't really do inspiration in general, but it sounds very interesting. And I, of course, you know, part of my concept for this instrument is that it be able to play pretty much wherever music is made. After all, that's one of the big stumbling blocks of the pipe organ. You know, it's not going anywhere, metaphorically or literally. And so, you know, I'm my department is to try to provide as good and as honest and, you know, a performance with integrity to my values, at least, if not others, wherever I'm assigned.
We're always hearing music in the background as we live our regular lives, clubs, bars, commercials, offices. I wonder if some of the pieces you have adapted have come from surprising sources, like you were just listening to something and it kind of clicked and you thought, this could work as an organ piece?
For the most part, no. Most of the music that I play is carefully calculated, and it's chosen for strategic reasons for the most part. I don't really listen to music. outside of work. And so, especially not classical music. So it has a lot to do with what I feel emotionally comes out of a piece, and what's, you know, what will be able to be reproduced on the organ in a convincing way. I mean, most of the music that I'm most interested in, of course, is in organ music. And I think I have that in common with most of humanity. So the organ music that I do play is extremely carefully chosen, and usually, you know, chosen to the degree that it has something to add to the emotional arc, I guess. And then other pieces, you know, the other pieces that will enter in, for instance, that Scriabin, I was referring to the fourth piano sonata. That's a piece that goes into, I guess, emotional and, you know, theatrical ground that won't be covered by other works. But I don't really take a view. I don't take the same. I think I don't really think about programming and especially classical music as most people do in the field, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't know, the trend to adapt Radiohead or to always have an encore of Piazzolla or something.
Well, I've arranged some Piazzolla that's good music, but I've arranged some other music that I think people laugh at me for a lot for, which I consider good music, but which, you know, wouldn't really be something you consider to be in the kin of popular music. For instance, on one of the Sony albums, I have some songs by Gordon Lightfoot and Leslie Bricusse and things like that. But that's because those songs gave me for whatever reason, their structure had and their sort of message and their cultural association gave me a lot of things that I could mess with. For me, playing, say, Gordon Lightfoot or Gershwin or those other things, that is classical music. It's music from our past. You know, I, for one, don't want to hear Radiohead outside of its element. You know, in a way, I'm a curious case because I come from, you know, basically a non-musical family. And I didn't have the upbringing that, I had a fabulous upbringing, but I didn't have the upbringing that some of my friends at Juilliard, say, you know, did, where their parents are musicians, their friends are musicians, they're making music in the family, they're raised in a, you know, a culture of viewing classical music as a high art. I actually, of course, understand that it is a high art, and I view it as that, but I don't think that's helpful to, you know, because something is a high art, you know, the way that we have our attitudes about it doesn't change that. And, you know, I think that a high art can also be and must be entertainment. And the reality is, of course, you know, for a classical musician in 2017, you know, the high art is just not enough. Most people will never be aware of your work if it doesn't have at least some minimal capacity to engage on other levels, even if it's just a very personal level.
This is shaping up to be quite an event. My guest, Cameron Carpenter, appearing at the State Theater on Saturday for the Fontana series. And before I let you go, we should look ahead to the following week when you'll appear with the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra on Saturday, April 1st in Miller Auditorium, playing both the Saint-Saëns Organ Concerto with the Symphony and a concerto by French composer Francis Poulenc. This is the lesser-known work. Could you tell us some of your favorite things about the Poulenc concerto?
Let's see. It's a great vehicle for a kind of spontaneous emotional passion that occurs in the moment. It's a declamation of sorts between the organ and a reduced orchestra. It's basically just for strings and timpani. And so there's this intense kind of conflict about it, which is maybe more extreme than in other pieces of Poulenc. It has a hard edge to it, this piece. And it also has, humor that, you know, that you have to hear the entire work. It's like a contextual sort of humor that there are moments that wouldn't maybe seem humorous on their own, but which are heard in the context of the overall darkness of the piece. And it's got a lot of cynicism and darkness and intensity, and it also has some eroticism and some sort of casual incidental aspects to it. You know, it's a piece that's full of character, and it should be played as a character study, which is what I do.
And now, from the depths of my organ ignorance, I wondered, because of this instrument you had built and designed for yourself, you know it so well, you perform on it exclusively for the most part, are you ever tempted during a performance to try out a different stop or sound or change up your arrangement on the fly?
Oh yeah, of course. That's how I perform in general. I never play things twice the same way. By the way, I think that's true for every musician, whether they realize it or not. I mean, simply the combinatorial reality of music is that the number of possibilities that confront a player simply by dint of the number of decisions that they have to make and the way those decisions diverge over the timeline of a piece is so vast that even if you tried to play pieces exactly the same way every time, you would never succeed. There would always be deviations that would make the work new. That's one of the joys of music making, and it's also one of the solaces for me that you know, sort of comfortably disproves the idea that there can be any real authority in music. One of the painful and destructive concepts in classical music, especially in the music making of the last, say, 70 years, is the idea that there is a right and wrong way, and also that music can somehow be damaged. There isn't, and it can't. And the multiplicity of approaches that is not only written into what music is, but I think is actually demanded by it, is one of the justifications for live performance, perhaps one of the few. And so it's one of the things in which I revel unapologetically, because, of course, I can't do otherwise. It's sort of like free will, but that's the paradox of Christianity, is that you have to have, of course you've got free will. The guy upstairs says you have to have it. It's sort of like that.
Well, Cameron Carpenter, this has been a fascinating discussion. Kalamazoo's looking forward to your solo recital on Saturday at the State Theater and your concert with the Kalamazoo Symphony the following Saturday in Miller Auditorium. Thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, I'm so grateful for you having me on. Thank you.